Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to the Hollywood Boulevard podcast, hosted by Jonathan Moody and Donnie Sturgis.
Greetings, Starfighters. This is Donnie Sturgis with hosting tonight's episode of the Hollywood Boulevard podcast. With me, as always, is my co-host, fellow Starfighter Jonathan Moody.
Hey, what's up?
And, of course,
by the way,
real quick,
before you get right into our next host or producer, wanted to mention that I guess right before this, I think they recorded your sigh, Donnie. I just want to let you know, like, you're a little, I think it was your sigh. It was either one of your guys. But right before it started, just so you get a glimpse before that happens. Anyway, just
okay.
Wanted to throw that out there.
All right.
Go ahead.
Anyway. And with us is our esteemed producer, Alfred Crane.
You bet your asteroid.
And tonight, I'm pretty much host or basically running the show as we talk about one of my favorite movies of all time, my favorite sci-fi movies that's not Star Wars, and that is The Last Starfighter. That is a movie that came out, I believe, in 1984. It was directed by Nick Castle, who some of you might know, some of you might not know, also played the Shape in the original Halloween. This is a movie that did a modest amount of money in the box office. I mean, it definitely made more than, it was like a $15 million budget. I think it made like almost like twice that. But it wasn't a huge success, like it was moderate. It became huge on cable and video, VHS, and that's where it really gained traction and became a huge cult classic. And like I said, it's become one of my favorite movies of all time, and we'll jump right into that here in a second. And, of course, I'm sure you guys have both Jonathan, you said you just got the Blu-ray, so you've seen it again for the first time in, like, a while. So, and then Alfred, I'm sure you've seen it.
Yes, I have. I remember seeing it at the Coliseum Mall when it came out in the movie theater. My mom took me. And
so
it was amazing.
You saw it in theaters?
Yeah, I did.
You lucky son of a bitch. I would love to see this movie in the theaters. I had to wait till it showed up on, like, HBO a million times. Damn, that's I'm in awe of you, sir. That's really fantastic. So let's talk about the film first. A brief rundown for people who haven't seen. You should see it. Get the DVD. I don't know how. Just find it, watch it. It's about a young man named Alex Rogan who is trying to apply for a good college. Lives in a trailer park. Has a beautiful girlfriend like they always do in those movies. And gets turned down, finds himself playing a video game in his trailer park that he loves to play, and we beat it. And a crazy con man from the stars, played by Robert Preston, comes down in a futuristic car and tells him that he won the game and that basically it was recruiting technique to take him to the stars and fight against Zur and the Kodan Armada. So, and that's where, that's the bulk of the movie. And, of course, you have a whole sorts of really cool shit that happens in space and on Earth at the trailer park. And so let's go with our initial thoughts on this one. We'll do the round robin thing. Alfred, since you got to see it in theaters, I want to hear your take first. What do you think of this film?
I really liked it. I liked it so much that I watched it till I was sick of it. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but when it was on HBO or on VHS, I watched
Amen.
It and watched it. And then last night I watched it again and I was in awe of how good it still holds up to today. Even the special effects of especially the Gunstar are really cool.
Sure.
I remember, you know, being a kid, you know, your biggest thing is like, that would be so awesome to have, play a video game and then get selected to go into space, and then your girlfriend goes into space with you. I mean, that would be just completely awesome. And it was a good mix of comedy, humor. I was not bored at all with it. There was no slow parts. I forgot about... it's like I hadn't seen it in so long. It was like going down a familiar river. It's like, oh, yeah, I remember these landmarks. And I remember parts when I was watching it. But, yeah, I think it still holds up. All that characters are believable. And I got to find... It said Will Wheaton played a bit part in it. And I missed that, so I don't know where he was at in the movie, but it said he was like Lewis's friend or something.
I believe his scenes ended up on the cutting room floor, if I remember correctly. They were shot, but in the end, they didn't make it into the film. I believe Will Wheaton had gone on record about this a couple times, too. Unfortunately, I don't know if the deleted scenes. I haven't checked out the special features on the Blu-ray in a while, but I don't think there are deleted scenes that have it. But I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and Dan O'Hurley, he was amazing. I liked
him so much.
The original movie, he was just perfect. So
yeah,
yes,
Dan O'Hurley.
Because it's funny because he played RoboCop, I think, or RoboCop 2, I think it was.
Yeah, well, he was in both RoboCops. He had a more prominent role in RoboCop 2. In the first one, he was oblivious to what was going on at OCP. And in the second one, they decided to make him an outright villain of the piece.
Yes, okay.
Which was something that Dan O'Hurley, he was used to doing before then, because he was also in Halloween 3 as the villain of that movie. This is one of the few times he actually got to play a good guy for a change.
Yeah,
and then on top
right.
of that,
Halloween
you know,
3.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah, I now remember.
But the unmistakable voice, like he had a very specific voice that when you heard it, you knew who it was. I mean, he just unmistakable.
Definitely.
So, Jonathan, you just watched it recently, I think last night.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fresh in your mind.
Yeah, actually,
so
I watched it today.
Okay,
so it's even fresher.
So he very much so.
Yeah. No. It's the first time I had ever heard of the movie, because I don't even think I remember seeing anything about it in the video store that I used to work in or anything. So I didn't know anything about it until it was Clerks, the cartoon. That had an episode where Randall beats a video game, and he's, you know, and it's just like Last Starfighter, except he has to go build pyramids in Egypt or something. And,
yeah, they make
help,
him into
you
a
know,
slave.
Help with that. Yeah.
Yeah,
and so it was funny because of that, but I was like, what is that movie? You know, right? So I went on Netflix and I rented The Last Starfighter, and I thought it was awesome. It was a lot of fun, and I enjoyed it. And then I rewatched it recently, and I'm sure I loved it even more. You know, for some reason I don't know. As I think as you get older, you appreciate this stuff a little bit more.
Sure.
Actually, it's funny because last night I watched Weekend at Bernie's, which was also Catherine Mary Stewart.
Mary Stewart,
who's in, was it Last Starfighter as Maggie, but she's also in, she's also in
Night,
like,
of,
Night
the
of the Comet.
Comet.
And she's actually going to be at Scares That Care, by the way. So if anybody wants to come out to Scares That Care in August, come see her there.
That's awesome.
She'll be with Kelly Maroney. Doing a Night of Comet, photo thing.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah, so it's going to be a really good show. But hopefully you can make it, Donnie. I know you're not sure. You're up in the air yet about that. But
we'll see. A lot of stuff going on with Darkstone during the summer, so we'll see how that goes. I know we're filming in June, July, and possibly into August, so we'll see.
Yeah, but no, I really enjoyed rewatching that, and it still holds up. It's not a movie that that you get lost in the 80s, you know, tropes or anything. In fact, it didn't even feel like an 80s movie, other than the fact that the arcade game looked like freaking Atari or something. You know, like that's the only thing.
It's funny you should mention that, because it was being developed by Atari.
Wow. That's funny. But it does look like an Atari game. It looks like Asteroids and stuff, which I bet is why they even have that line, "You bet your asteroid," because I felt like that was a little bit of a nod to the, you know, to the gaming company and everything like that. So anyway, I just enjoyed it.
All right. I guess I'll take my turn. The only reason why I save myself for last is because I have more of a personal connection to this movie, not in any like major way or anything, but just simply for the fact that right around the time this movie came out, we ended up moving into a trailer park in northwestern PA. I was probably about 10 years old. It was 1985. I'd already seen the movie a handful of times by that point. But as I was growing up, again, it's one of those movies where I didn't get to see it in theaters to know anything about it. But then all of a sudden, like, it kept popping up on like Cinemax or HBO, like on just ad nauseum. And like Alfred said, I did the same thing. I watched it until I watched it to death. Anytime it was on, I had to watch it. I couldn't, like, it was weird. It had an effect. Like, I love Star Wars more, but I think the last Starfighter has had a more of an impact on me. And for a number of reasons. One, because it's inspirational. You know, kid in the middle of nowhere trying to make his dreams come true. They fail, but then he realizes he has new dreams that just, like, door closes, another one opens, and this one is just fabulous and takes him into the beyond. You know, it's crazy. Got humor. It's got great characters, great actors. Lance Guest is amazing as Alex Rogan. But for me, especially after we lived in a trailer park, I really started to identify with the character, because at the same time, I was 10 years old. I was in fifth grade. I didn't know what my future was going to be. I loved playing video games. I was a huge video game player. Started with the Atari, you know, got the Nintendo and everything. And so for as far as I was concerned, Alex Rogan was me, you know, when I was 18. Like, that was me. I projected myself into him. And so for me, it was just, and it captured really what trailer parks were really like back in the 80s. It wasn't like, you know, guys wearing wife beaters and missing teeth and with 20 kids and their wife in a muumuu and everything. I mean, there was that. Every once in a while in our trailer park, we'd get somebody that lived in the bad corner of the trailer park that kind of was like that. But for the most part, it were just communities of people that weren't doing so well, but they helped each other. A lot of really good friendships were made out of that. I saw that in this movie, and I really identified with it, and I really connected with it. And so seeing this kid go into the stars and everything, this is what I wanted to do. And so this is a movie that if I ever feel like I need inspiration, if I ever feel down, if I ever feel like I'm not going anywhere, or I feel like I need something to uplift me, it's either Rocky, Karate Kid, or this movie. Those are the top three movies that are uplifting to me when it comes to I needing a kick in the pants to get me moving. Last Starfighter is one of my favorites. I love everything about it. I don't necessarily agree that the special effects still hold. I mean, they're good. They're good by the standards of the day. At the time, I didn't know any different. I mean, you know, they looked great. I can tell that they're definitely computer. Like, it definitely looks almost like a video game cutscene. But the problem is, at this point, I don't give a crap anymore, because that's part of its charm. They still work. I mean, it's like there's enough of a you know, man behind the curtain aspect to it that I can still allow myself to be fooled by it, even though some of the edges are showing, you know, and everything. So, and of course the score, which we'll get into here in a minute, was also just a riveting and amazing. I just love everything about it. It's definitely one of my favorite movies of all time. I think I've exhausted my take on it. So, let's switch gears a little bit. We were talking about the FX. So the effects were something revolutionary first time. There, Jonathan was looking. You were looking up some stuff earlier and looking at the scene in the first, like the first video game movie, which the first video game movie that preceded it was technically Tron. As far as you know, as far as making it front and center, and also the first movie to use CG in a major way was also Tron. It beat it by like a couple years. The Last Starfighter was the one that really kind of it was really a major component, because even in Tron, the CG was meant to show digital things, and then of course in The Last Starfighter, it was supposed to basically they're using the digital effects for real things that are happening in the real world. So, what I guess we kind of already talked about the FX a little bit already, but well, I don't really know. Like, I think we kind of exhausted the FX stuff when we talked about the movie.
Right. Like, that's pretty much the movie. A lot of it is just the effects.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, that's a big, big part of it, which is really cool. I like that.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, that at the time they didn't have the computers like we have today, so... You know, something like that, the effects that they had for those movies, like, it took a long time for them to render those things and make them work. And I think as far as the effects go, the ships still look really good. They still hold up to me. It's things like when you get to, like, the moons and the asteroids, that's when it starts to show, like, you start to see, okay, I can tell that moon doesn't look quite right. It looks a little weird. But for the most part, I think the effects are very charming, and for their time, I thought they were really well done. Anything to add to that?
There's a scene on the explosion of the ship at the end of the toward the end of the movie. I thought it at first it looks kind of like 80s, you know, like it looks not as good. But then I kind of like. Rewound it a little bit, and in 480s it was pretty damn good. It still just doesn't look like what it would look like today. It would look a lot better, but by that standard I think it looked pretty damn good.
Yeah, one thing with the effects, I mean, speaking of moving away from the ship effects, the costumes and the aliens they had as the pilots, they did really well with the special effects and the makeup effects.
The makeup.
I mean, I was really impressed.
Wait. Good job, Alfred. Way to bring this back into fervor. I was so focused on the digital effects, I totally forgot about the makeup effects and how great they looked. You're absolutely right. The Zandozan, an amazing creature. The beta unit, the way they do the transformation sequence when he's laying there and his face is basically collapsing and uncollapsing as he's transforming.
Was disturbing when I was a kid.
Right? That scared the crap out of me when I was a kid, man. And I know it wasn't supposed to be, like, scary, but you didn't know what that thing was. Like, when you first meet Alex, when Alex first meets him in the car, you only see the shadows where its face is supposed to be. They shake hands, there's a shock, and you don't know what's going on. So, and the way they framed that shot, the way that shot was edited to look, it makes it look like it's supposed to be a horror scene, because what did they do? Like, Lewis comes into the room and says, Alex, you need to get up. And all he's doing is moaning, and then he leaves. And what's he do? He pulls the covers down, and almost you just see this ghastly looking creature with these weird noises coming out of it, and these lights lighting up in its face, and it is something out of a horror movie. Like, it is so effective, but yet, you know, you find out later that, you know, Alex, it's just, you know, he's turning into Alex to help Alex out while Alex goes and fights the Kodan Armada, but no, that was a good point. I hadn't even, I was overlooking the effects, the makeup effects so much, just focusing on the digital, but you're right.
I do want to mention that I looked it up, and Dan Mason, who plays Lord Krill in the movie, also was on an episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation, which also had Will Wheaton. So in the first season, so I think that's awesome. I'm sure it had a little bit something to do with him being in the Last Starfighter and being in that makeup and doing such a great job.
nice little 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon kind of thing going on there too, with the Will Wheaton connection, even though Will sees
yeah.
the cut.
Yeah.
So
I like
yeah,
that
the...
guy's and where his that red plate went over his eye all the time when he's making.
Oh
the
yeah, yeah, yeah.
The
monocle. The electric monocle every time he, you know, it always punctuated whenever he was going to say something important, it would go, and it would punctuate what he was about to say. Like, it was so important. Great scene. I also want to give a shout out to all the different, like, up until that point, you had Star Wars was like dominating the science fiction / sci-fi fantasy market when it came to movies. Everybody was trying desperately to keep up. Everybody was trying to do their own Star Wars on TV and in film. Last Starfighter definitely mm-hmm. was trying to tap into that market. And one of the things that Star Wars really did great was their ability to showcase so many different aliens and so many variations due to makeup and costuming and stuff. But I will say that I think Last Starfighter did an amazing job. They didn't have as big of a budget, and they didn't have as many aliens featured. But two places especially where I think the makeup, the alien effects budget was really stellar. First of all, you were talking earlier, Dan O'Hurley, he is Grig. The makeup effects on him, because that guy is wearing basically a death mask over his head. Like that, if you look at the prosthetics on his face, he's basically wearing like a complete and total like scale helmet that's glued to his face. And yet the man is able to enunciate, and he's able to do such an amazing job of articulating and act through that, which is impressive to his acting skills as well. The
yeah,
other
mm-hmm.
thing are the other thing is the aliens that were in the briefing scene, like the tendril guy that gets angry with he's got the spider eyes going on, and you got the other
yeah.
furry little thing that's talking to him. That whole sequence, you get one brief moment where you get to see all these other starfighters of different alien races. It's a brief moment, but it's a very effective and a very memorable one. To this day, one of the scenes that always pops into my head is when he steps on the one tendril and the thing gets, I should grind you into space dust.
Right.
But
it definitely
funny
felt
when
like a kid's movie.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it's definitely it's a kid's movie, but it also it definitely has some adult appeal as well, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
It's funny
what are you saying, Albert?
Okay. I was gonna say, like, I saw The Dark Crystal not too long ago, and they had this line Tanya Tamar that I forgot about, and then mm-hmm. in this one it was Praetorna, and I forgot all
oh,
about
yeah.
that, but as soon as I heard it, I remembered it. I thought that
oh,
was
yeah.
pretty
kita,
cool.
Pretana, pretana, kita, kita.
Yeah. It just made me smile when I heard that.
I also like
your
attention to detail,
bring up,
too. What's that?
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say, I like their attention to detail because most movies, when you're dealing with aliens and stuff, everybody just knows everybody else's language. There's no, like, we just assume, you know, and if it's a speaking alien language, it's your subtitles. But I love the fact that Last Starfighter is one of the few movies at the time that actually took into account that, hey, Alex is probably going to need a galactic translator device. So what do? They give him one. And that was beautiful. And I feel like that was – I feel like that had to have been like they broke the seal on that one, because ever since then, like when you do Farscape, when you look at all these other shows, they have, you know, universal translators now,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that wasn't really heard of before. I think Last Starfighter probably helped jumpstart that whole concept with everything that came afterwards.
Well, do you know what is funny to me? And there's going to be two things I'm going to mention here, but one thing is that this movie would have drove my dad nuts. I'm glad I never saw it with him. Because he hates, he can do his, you know, disbelief or whatever. He can go beyond it. But there's a part where they fly into space, and he's not using any kind of, like, breathing devices or anything. They're not giving him anything. He's just flying into space, and it makes absolutely no sense. If you're into space, you're going to die just by not having air or whatever. So So that thing made me go, oh God, I'm glad my dad's not watching, because that's just something he sees in all these sci-fi movies that do it. I think like Explorers handled, you know, did that, and a bunch of other movies, and it just drives people crazy, because it's not, I mean, it's not supposed to be realistic necessarily, but maybe a little bit, you know. And the other thing, and to go back to the flying of it, I mentioned it to you guys in the chat when I was when I was watching it, was that there was the ship that he used as car looked kind of like a DeLorean a little bit, and
it did.
And it was both Universal and was pre Back to the Future, I believe. I believe was that. Was that 85?
Back to the Future was 85, yes. So, yes,
so
it did precede it by a year.
Then. So, I wonder...
If I remember correctly, I remember reading somewhere that the Star Car from Last Starfighter was indeed inspired by the DeLorean, because the DeLorean was a hugely popular car at the time. John DeLorean basically was, you know, still riding high on all of his cocaine, and still putting out tons of those cars. In fact, I think the car only started to wane right around the time that Back to the Future came out. So the car was already on its decline when Back to the Future used it for the film. And that's the only thing that kind of helped it maintain a little bit more popularity for a little bit longer was those movies. But I believe by the end of 84, beginning of 85 sometime, I think that's when the DeLorean car company was already starting to run into problems with production and everything, and the whole thing was starting to fall apart. So I could be wrong on that. I wasn't planning on researching DeLorean tonight for tonight's podcast, so I could be wrong. But I know I believe it was right around that time. But it's a good catch, because I do believe that the Star Car was based off the DeLorean as well. It's a very popular car at the time. So anyway,
I wanted to break in and say that we're about to go off our live feed in 3 minutes, but join us for our final 15 on the web. Thanks.
Yeah. So I want to get into the score, because the score is probably another one of my favorite things about the movie. We don't have to go into it too much, because there's really not a lot to talk about. But Craig Safin is the composer for the score, and he wanted to do something that was big like Star Wars, but he wanted to go bigger. And so he basically kind of doubled up on all the instruments that you would use in an orchestra to make this score amazing. And I have to say, I own the score on I own the special edition score that I think La La Land Records put out a few years ago on CD, and it's probably one of my favorite scores of all time. It's thrilling. It's when you listen to it, you feel like, oh man, I could go out to the stars. Like it's a riveting, just thrilling score. He makes the Last Starfighter theme is fantastic to get, and it's so what's the word I'm looking for? He uses it in so many different ways. Like he can take that theme and make it like he does the march, you know, where it's like kind of almost like a military thing, but then he can also take the same theme and soften it and make it more like a romantic version of the theme. It's amazing how malleable this one theme is, and he manages to use it in so many different ways. And I think it's one of the things that appeals to me about that movie. I don't know how close you guys listen to the score or whatever, but feel free to add any other thoughts if you want to the music of The Last Starfighter, because I think the music is just as important, and I think it fits perfectly with making the movie as good as it is.
Yeah, I agree, Donnie. I love movie scores, and this one was definitely one that came out and grabbed you, even in the opening credits, and pull you right in. I mean,
oh yeah,
a good score is something that I can listen and create to. I used to just buy movie soundtracks and listen to scores while I was writing D&D modules, writing adventures for role-playing games. But the score is definitely awesome, and it's really catching. I just found out today that Craig Safin did the score to one of my other 80s favorite movies, Remo Williams.
Yes, he did. That's another good score, too.
Nice.
All good composers have a similar beat, but it's just those, hey, that sounds good, but something that catches you in and gets you pumped up is good. So I'll pass it over to Mr. M.
Well, I agree. I think it definitely has a very bigger than Star Wars vibe, to outdo Star Wars, which is not an easy feat because John Williams' score is just always amazing. Craig did such a great job. I literally thought it was John Williams when I was listening to it. Though it was a little bit different, I thought that this was the same style and everything. So it could have been him and doing a different version. And I looked it in. I was like, this is crazy because Nick Castle, who's gone on to direct other things later, he directed, Major Pain. One of my favorite comedies of when I was a kid. I just grew up loving that movie. And then he also directed a few other movies, but he's not really known for directing, playing the shape in Halloween. But there was really nobody, the writer was somebody who had not really done a lot of stuff, all these people weren't huge. And Craig, I wasn't aware of him when I watched it. So, but now I'm going to be on the lookout for other things that he's definitely done. So there you go.
Excellent.
I loved it.
All right. So we got 13 minutes. I don't really want to touch about the video game too much because, well, to be fair, there never really was a video game. It was in development. Atari was developing it to coincide with the release of the movie. Some of the scenes that you see in the movie are from the original game as it was being developed, but it never went anywhere. Once Atari saw the movie, they were like, this isn't going to make any money, and they pulled out. There were a couple of Atari games, this is Atari's was going to do an arcade version for the movie. But there were a couple of Atari games that were going to be made. There were two different attempts to make an Atari game for The Last Starfighter for the 2600. Both of those ended up being called something completely different and ended up not being the game either. So I think to this day, there is not really an actual legitimate Last Starfighter video game. Although I believe if you dig far enough, I think you can find bits and pieces of prototypes and stuff and attempts and even some are playable to a degree because they're not finished, which is unfortunate because this movie did a pretty decent amount in the box office. Plus, Alan Dean Foster, who ghost wrote the first Star Wars novelization. And also did Splinter of the Mind's Eye for Star Wars, the first follow-up book, also wrote the movie novelization for Last Starfighter. And I believe Marvel Comics also did a 3-issue comic book miniseries of Last Starfighter. So it actually had a decent enough presence that, it's a shame that the video game never really took off. Especially considering, space shoot 'em ups are very popular, especially back in the 80s. They were hugely popular thanks to, games like Space Invaders and stuff. So, but I want to.
And then a quick note about a game. FASA, FASA, they made a bunch of Star Trek board games in the 80s. And they released, it was a small box set. The Last Starfighter Combat Simulator is a board game, but it was really cool. I may still have it somewhere here, but if you look up FASA Last Starfighter game, it was like it had a template for you to be a Gunstar, and then it had one or two things to be the other ships, and it was like a counter turn-based game, but I remember picking that up, and so you may want to be on the lookout for that.
Yeah, I can't. It's probably a rare thing. I can't imagine that there were that many made. So, and of course, it's out of print. So, yeah, if anybody wants to get one, I would eBay, but be prepared to pay a pretty penny for it, I'm sure. Yeah. That's pretty freaking awesome. That's wow. I didn't even know that existed. That is just cool. Of course you would have it, Alfred. Of course you would. And I say that as, I say that as a compliment too. Like, of course you would have that. That's. But we've got maybe 10 minutes left, less than 10 minutes. So before I want to get to the last two talking points tonight before we conclude. The next thing I want to talk about is basically the legacy of The Last Starfighter. Like I said, it was a movie that did a modest amount. Like, it wasn't a huge success, but it wasn't a failure either. It made twice the money that it was budgeted for. But it has a huge following. It captured the imaginations of kids growing up in trailer parks like me, watching cable. It's one of those things where they tried to make sequels of it over time and just never came to fruition. There's been, attempts to do spin-offs and books and everything. So what do you think is one of the biggest things, what is the legacy of The Last Starfighter? What do you think is one of the biggest things to take away from what The Last Starfighter has given us? Jonathan.
The legacy of it, like, what was it that what made it different and stand out than everything else?
Yeah, well, what do you think is The Last Starfighter's legacy? What do you think it brought to the table? What do you think it's done that has basically helped, that makes it stand apart, that made it such a cult classic?
I think it was, I think we tackled a lot of that when we talked about it, but I think, like, the effects were great for its time, and as you said, like, Tron kind of brought the effects to fruition, but
right.
This movie kind of kept it going, paved the way, because if this movie hadn't been made, who knows if somebody else would have made another movie just like Tron, and this movie,
right,
CGI might have just kind of went out the window after a while or something. People would be like, oh, nobody's interested in that, let's not do that. But this movie did, I guess, well enough, and it has a cult, enough where people really started to kind of do CGI throughout the years, and have perfected it to the point where you can do it on your own computer at your own house, and stuff.
Sure.
Which is amazing. You could make your own Last Starfighter movie if you wanted to. Yeah, I don't suggest it if you don't want to get sued, but that's something you could do. So anyway, that's my thing. I think that basically the effects really kind of paved the way for a lot of these things, and I think a lot of people don't, it's not as well known as a movie necessarily. Like,
sure.
I don't really hear the name The Last Starfighter brought up. And I think it is definitely in need of some kind of reboot in some way or another.
Absolutely.
To get, the attention. Just as Weekend at Bernie's does too. I'm fighting the fight on that one. Nobody agrees with me on Facebook, but I think Weekend at Bernie's deserves, like, David Schwimmer as Jonathan Silverman. Perfect. I would watch that. All right.
What about you,
your
Alfred?
Turn,
what
Alfred.
Do you think?
I think, first of all, I'm kind of tired of reboots and reimagining, but if you made a sequel, that would be amazing. Kind of like they did with Star Wars, you just have a new story, but you could bring back Lance. I'm assuming Lance Guest is still alive. But,
yeah, he's still around.
You could bring him back as an admiral. You could have the goofy guy who escaped in it. But I think the legacy of it is good effects, but the effects were a big part of the movie, but they took second stage to the story and the acting.
Sure.
They did, like, a lot of movies that come out now is like, hey, we've got all these effects, they'll be really cool, but we really don't have a good story to go with it, but we're going to make it anyways. This had an engaging story, characters you liked, everybody you're getting pulled in. It had, a sad moment, and then later on it becomes happy, and it went through the range of emotions. I mean, it creeped me out when the master spy was getting his head microwaved.
Oh, God,
I mean,
that's another crazy scene.
And I remember that. And then his big holographic head. And it was just a lot of just neat stuff that I really hadn't seen up to that point. There is some cheese to it, and some of the effects are kind of kooky, but there's nothing that I could say that movie stinks or it doesn't hold up. I think it still holds up to today, and I think they could make a sequel to it that would be really cool.
I completely agree. I think, for the most part, the Legacy of Last Starfighter is a number of things. One, like you said, though the effects are somewhat dated, they were revolutionary for the time. I mean, if Last Starfighter hadn't done what it did, we probably wouldn't have the CG stuff that we have today. They might have gone a different direction. You know, that I said, no, this will never work. But so I think it helped pave the way for modern CG creations. I mean, without Last Starfighter, we might not have ever had Terminator 2 or Jurassic Park or anything of that nature. Also, I think like you said, even with the special effects not being great, like by today's standards, those special effects would have fallen apart completely if it didn't have the heart and the story and the characters that really carried the most of the weight of the film. And I think
right.
That's where Last Starfighter really, really stands ahead. Because even even Gene Siskel, before he died, admitted that it's basically just another cash in. It's just another Star Wars ripoff, but he says it's the best one at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I totally agree. Like it knew exactly how to hit you right between the eyes. It captured imaginations. Kids like me who live in trailer parks who were looking up to the sky or looking onto the horizon, you know, trying to figure out where their future is going to go. That movie was inspirational. It was one of those things where between the music and the heart behind the movie, was a film that you wanted to watch every time. It didn't matter where it was at. If that movie popped up on TV, I stopped and watched the rest of it. I could not watch that movie if it popped up on TV ever for the longest time. So I agree. I think despite the fact that it didn't do, you know, it just did a moderate amount of success in the box office, and it became a cult classic. And I think that the reasons why it became a cult classic is because of all those elements involved. You know, you had it again with the cast and the makeup and everything. I think it definitely earned its keep, to put it bluntly. I think that's pretty much it. I think we've exhausted everything that I can. Briefly, the whole sequel thing. I know there's been several attempts to do sequels as of right now. I think Gizmodo mentioned something that there is a sequel in the works, but it's kind of stalled at the moment. Kind of a reboot sequel kind of combination, kind of like what you guys are saying, where they probably do like what Star Wars has done and kind of bring old and new together and kind of do that. But as of right now, it's still kind of in the earliest stages. So hopefully we can get some more Last Starfighter out of it, because I definitely think the world needs more Last Starfighter. I think it's mm-hmm. It's a very underrated gem of a film. So with that, I think that pretty much concludes tonight's episode. I hope you guys had a great time listening. I guess this is where we do the round robin for where you can contact us. You can catch me on Facebook, Donnie Sturges. You can catch me still using the Baby Skeletor Instagram account for now until I get off my ass and do my own. And I've got Donnie Sturges on Twitter. I don't check it very often, but if I get alerts, which I usually do, if you message me on there, I'll answer you. I'm working on another podcast that I've been inspired by Hollywood Boulevard. So I kind of wanted to branch out and kind of do something. This won't be a live one. It'll be one that I record whenever, but it's called Retro Pop. This is my official announcement. Hollywood, you heard it here first, folks. Retro Pop is going to be a podcast that I'm going to do. Starting sometime this summer, I'll have guests on. You guys are definitely invited. We're going to talk about retro stuff. We're also going to talk about modern stuff. Anything pop culture, retro, modern, it's all going to go in there. So keep an eye out for that, guys. I've got the logo already done by a friend of mine. And that's it for me. What about the rest of you guys?
Well, it's about to end, like, literally in, like, a few seconds. So just
catch
us next
week
when we talk about Quentin Tarantino. with special guest Lisa Cantrell will be our guest for the final episode of this season. So thank you all for listening.
Have a good night, everybody.
And thank you.